Hiranyakashipu, king of the demons, text 43. Fire, although situated in Ud, is perceived to be different from the Ud, as air, although situated within the mouth and nostrils, is perceived to be separate, and as the sky, although all-pervading, never mixes with anything. So, the living entity, although now encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, is separate from it. Please repeat after me. As fire,
although situated in
Ud,
is perceived to be different from the
Ud. As air,
although situated within the mouth and nostrils,
is perceived to be separate,
and as the sky,
although all-pervading,
never mixes with anything,
so the living entity,
although now encaged within the material body,
of which it is the source,
is separate from it.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has explained that the material energy and spiritual energy both emanate from Him. The material energy is described as me bhinna prakriti ashtadha, the eight separated energies of the Lord. But although the eight gross and subtle material energies, namely earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego, are stated to be bhinna, separate from the Lord, actually they are not. As fire appears separate from Ud, and as air flowing through the nostrils and mouth of the body appear separate from the body, so the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears separate from the living being, but is actually separate and not separate simultaneously. This is the philosophy of Achinta Bheda Vetattva, propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. According to the reactions of karma, the living being appears separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but actually he is very intimately related with the Lord. Consequently, even though we now seem neglected by the Lord, he is actually always alert to our activities. Under all circumstances, therefore, we should simply depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus revive our intimate relationship with Him. We must depend upon the authority and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it's been described as fire, although situated in Ud, is perceived to be different from the Ud, as air, although situated within the mouth and nostrils, is perceived to be separate, and as the sky, although all-pervading, never mixes with anything, so the living entity, although now encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, is separate from it. Now, just in one shloka, the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness has been explained. The spirit soul is encaged in the body and it is separate from the body, but apparently it appears to be non-different from the body, especially we, those who have become conditioned by our material existence, have become limited by our sense perceptions, which is material, and through our material sense perceptions all we can perceive is matter or material. So with these material senses, we do not have the ability to perceive the spirit, which is actually the source of everything and source of all our activities. The only faculty that can be used, or the only faculty that can perceive to some extent the existence of the spirit soul, is intelligence. Only with our intelligence we can perceive our real identity to some extent, not to a fullest extent. Like with intelligence, a man can wonder, what is the difference between a dead body and a living body? What is the difference between consciousness and matter? So one can question, and this way with his intelligence he can somehow comprehend that he is not this body. Like apparently there is no fire in the wood. When we see the wood, it looks like a solid matter. But as soon as the fire comes in contact with fire and it becomes ignited, then the fire comes out of wood. Actually, the fire is in the wood, but we cannot see it. But with our intelligence, we can perceive it. That yes, if I take this piece of log and put it in fire, then this fire will also become, I'm sorry, this wood will also become fire. So this is how one must approach towards his spiritual identity. Now, it is very unfortunate that we have become conditioned by this material nature. We have become bound by the material nature, or we can say we, the spirit souls, have become encaged in this material body. And it's a kind of a punishment. We committed some crime, and due to that crime or due to that offense, we are suffering the consequences of that offense. And what is that offense? The offense is we have forgotten Krishna. Krishna bhuli shei jib anadi bohir mukh atoeb maya tare dai samsar dukkho. In Prema Vivarta, Jagadananda Pandit, one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very intimate associate, described that. And he's explaining why the living entities fallen into this material platform, why we have fallen into this material nature, why have we become bound by the material nature. The first cause, the original cause, is our forgetfulness of Krishna. Krishna bhuli shei jib anadi bohir mukh. The moment if project our consciousness away from Krishna, our consciousness is projected onto Krishna's external energy, maya. Atoeb maya tare daish samsar dukkho. This maya energy constantly gives the living entity, the conditioned living entities, punishment. Krishna, and that then he says, Krishna bohir mukh hoiya bhogo bancha kare, nikatostho maya tare japotiya dhare. As soon as the living entity projects his consciousness away from Krishna, then his consciousness is projected onto Krishna's external energy, bhinna prakriti. And what is that bhinna prakriti? This bhinna prakriti is this material nature. And this bhinna prakriti, or separate energy of Krishna, the external energy of Krishna, is composed of eight elements. They are earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And it has been explained how the living entity becomes bound by these eight elements of the material nature. As soon as a living entity projects his consciousness away from Krishna, his consciousness is projected onto Krishna's external energy, because everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. Now, when our consciousness is projected onto Krishna, then our consciousness is projected onto Krishna's internal potency, that is the spiritual nature or Krishna's internal nature. But when we project our consciousness away from Krishna, then our consciousness is projected onto Krishna's external energy. And this external energy is inferior by nature. Aparayam itastannam prakritim vidhi me param. Apara means inferior. Aparayam itastu. This nature is inferior energy of Krishna. But we, the living entities, are coming from Krishna's superior energy. Prakritim vidhi me param. Krishna himself is telling in Bhagavad Gita, beyond this inferior nature of mine, there is a superior nature. And jiva bhutang mahabaho jajidam dharjate jagat. Jiva bhutang, the living entities, are coming from that superior energy of mine, superior nature of mine, and these living entities are sustaining this inferior material nature. So as soon as a living entity comes in contact with the inferior material nature, then he immediately develops a tendency to lord over this material nature. Because it is a natural tendency of the superior to dominate over the inferior. Now the spirit soul is superior in quality, because it's coming from the superior nature, and this material nature is inferior, so as soon as it comes in contact with the spirit material nature, the spirit soul desires to lord over this material nature. He begins to think that I am the lord of this whole nature. Now that actually transforms his identity. His original identity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. But by coming in contact with the material nature, he develops a false concept that he is the Lord and Master. And that is the first covering called false ego. The covering of false ego, a wrong identity. His original identity is that he is a servant of Krishna, but now he thinks that he is the master of Maya. And then he begins to plan how he is going to enjoy this material nature. So that gives him the second covering of intelligence. And then his consciousness flows constantly towards the material nature through his mind, which is the internal sense. So this is how a living entity becomes encaged in a subtle body made of these three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego. But just this one subtle body, subtle material body, is not enough. He does not feel fully satisfied with this body. The involvement is not complete in the material nature. So in order to give him the full taste of material misery, Maya, or the predominating personality of this material nature, offers the living entity a gross material body made of earth, water, fire, air and ether. So this is how a living entity becomes very securely tied down to the material nature by Maya, first with a subtle body and then with a gross body. But these two bodies are actually his coverings, but beyond this body exists his real identity, the spirit soul. Now, the spirit soul is encaged in the body or material bodies, and he begins to think that this body is his actual identity, and thus he forgets his real identity, that he is the servant of Krishna, that he is an eternal spirit soul. So that's what has been explained in this shloka, that how being conditioned by the material nature, a living entity identifies himself with the body, but actually his identity is separate from the body. And Prabhupada is telling in the purport further that actually the body and the spirit are simultaneously different and non-different. Because since the body is the extension of the spirit soul, the body is actually non-different from the spirit soul. That's why in the Vedas, sometimes the word Atma refers to the gross material body, mind, as well as the spirit. Actually, Atma means the self. Now, this word self refers to all these three, the spirit soul, the mind or the subtle body, as well as the gross body. And that is because the gross body and the subtle body are the extension of the spirit soul. And that's why we feel so closely connected to this body, because due to our desire, due to our past karmas, we got this body. It is actually an extension of our spirit soul. So in that respect, this body is non-different from the spirit soul. But at the same time, it is different, because spirit has nothing to do with matter. Because of his misconception and because of his wrong desires, the spirit soul has become bound in these bodies, which is actually an extension of himself in the material direction. Like when we develop a cancer, or say when we develop a boil in our body, actually the boil is an extension of our body, and we cannot say that this boil is not the body. The boil is also the body. But this boil is an unnatural growth of the body, and that's why it gives pain to the body. So the same way, these bodies, these material bodies, are an unnatural growth of the spirit soul. It's a cancer of the spirit soul, and it simply causes misery and suffering. And this cancer, this disease, is called bhava-roga, and the material disease, or disease of material bondage. So a wise man will recognize this point, these facts, and try to become free, try to become cured of this disease. And the way to do that is to become Krishna conscious, withdraw our consciousness from matter and project our consciousness onto Krishna. The cause of our material bondage is our projection of our consciousness to matter, withdrawing it from Krishna. Now let us withdraw our consciousness from matter and project it onto Krishna. And that is the process of devotional service, bhakti yoga, and that is Krishna consciousness. So if we accept the process properly and practice it properly, then in due course of time we will become cured of this disease of material existence. Bhava maha davagni nirvapanam. It will happen if we endeavor with sincerity. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Actually, the material nature is a perverted reflection of the spiritual nature. So whatever is existing in the material nature is also existing in the spiritual nature, but in its right identity or in its right situation. Now, intelligence is there also in the spiritual sky. Mind is there in the spiritual sky. But they are situated in the right way. Say, for instance, as we can at least understand, like, what is a false ego? What is the false ego? False ego means wrong identity, right? I mean, our actual identity is that we are the servants of Krishna. But when forgetting that we are the servants of Krishna, we begin to think that we are the masters of Maya. That is the false ego, wrong identity. Now, intelligence is the understanding of Krishna or Krishna's nature. Now, when that, instead of understanding Krishna or how we can become engaged in Krishna's service, if we begin to plan how we are going to enjoy the material nature, that is the material intelligence, right? And mind actually is the seat of all our senses, or you can say mind is the seat of consciousness. Right? Now, with the mind, what we are doing, I mean, the mind was actually supposed to be obsessed with Krishna. Mind was supposed to meditate on Krishna all the time. But instead of meditating on Krishna in the material nature, our mind is meditating on matter all the time. Right? So that's how, our faculties become perverted. Actually, they exist in reality. In Krishna consciousness. And that's why the mind's business is to man manabhavo madbhakta. Krishna is telling that with mind, you think of me all the time. And dadami buddhi yogamtam. When you become engaged in my service, I give you the intelligence by which jena mamupajantite, by which they come back to me. Right? So intelligence that means our mind becomes purified, our intelligence becomes purified, and then automatically our identity becomes purified when we practice the process of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Projecting, it is, if we look at it this way, if we try to visualize it graphically or, we can project our consciousness, since it's a very minute, like a ray, it can be projected onto one thing, right? Either you project your consciousness onto Krishna, or you project your consciousness away from Krishna. Right? In that sense, I meant that, when you forget, actually, what is the meaning of forgetfulness of Krishna? That is, your consciousness drifts away from Krishna and projects onto something, in some other direction. But other direction means, Krishna's external energy. So that's why it has been said that forgetting Krishna, the word that has been used by Jagadananda Pandit in Prema Vivarta is Krishna Bhuli. When a living entity forgets Krishna, or forgetting Krishna, when he becomes externally conscious, Bohirmukh, Bohirmukh means his consciousness is projected externally. So, to justify that expression, I just said that, you know, like he's saying that when one projects his consciousness externally, so that means from Krishna's internal potency, it is projected onto Krishna's external potency. And it's right, as you said, it's envy, due to envy, that our consciousness drifts away from Krishna. That we become envious of Krishna. Why Krishna should enjoy? Why not I? Right? And that, you know, why not I, you know, makes us forget Krishna. Yes, yes, desire is there. I mean, the first thing is actually starting, I mean, where we'll project our consciousness is directed by our desire. Desire is the guiding factor for projecting our consciousness. And the same way, when we desire to become Krishna conscious, then our consciousness is gradually projected back onto Krishna. Any other question?
Yes.
Yeah. You see, desire again is directed by will. So we have, with our the spirit has been endowed with the free will by Krishna. The spirit soul can decide, the individual can decide for himself what he wants. Right? That is his will. And the will projects his desire wherever. Or will actually, due to the will, one desires. The desire doesn't come from nothing. Desire is directed by the will. And Krishna has given the independence to will. Individuals have been endowed with that faculty.
So, according to your will,
well, I mean, ultimately it is whether we will love Krishna or whether we will not love Krishna. So whether we love Krishna or whether we will to love ourselves, right? Now when we try to love ourselves, then we fall into Krishna's Maya energy, external energy. But when we desire to love Krishna, then we are drawn into Krishna's internal potency. Is that clear or not quite? Yeah.
I just remember once in one class, on the verse, you said we're even dependent on Krishna in order to desire properly.
Well, Prabhupada said that Krishna gave the living entities the independence, right? The free will. And you see, Krishna gave us this free will because love, Krishna wants us to love Him. And love cannot be forced, right? Krishna never forces anyone, because Krishna wants that voluntarily, spontaneously one should desire to love Him. And that's why Krishna has given us the free will. Now you decide for yourself whether you want to love me or you want to go away from me. If you love me, then you'll enjoy. If you go away from me, you will suffer. Now you decide for yourself. So that free will has been given by Krishna to the living entities, has received the faculty of free will. Yes, you see, in the material direction, the mind is more powerful than intelligence. But when you are moving on the right direction, then intelligence becomes more powerful than the mind, right? And then you can force your mind, although the mind wants to run after the objects of the senses, but with your intelligence, you can check your mind and say, no, don't do that. And you are forcing your mind to think of Krishna, right? And when you think of Krishna, then Krishna helps. Dadami buddhi yogantam. Right? Krishna gives us the spiritual intelligence by which we can go back to Krishna. So Krishna helps when we help ourselves. Yes. And everyone else is imperfect. So he cannot admit that he did something wrong. So he finds that the others are actually it is others' mistake, it is others' fault. He is perfect. But when you become a devotee, when you try to rectify our consciousness, then we change our attitude. And then we think, as a devotee, we think that actually everything is wrong with me. And everybody else is all right. Only I could not become perfect. Yes.
It all seems very vague to me because it seems like we keep avoiding what the original cause for us coming here in the first place. If I knew what I did wrong, then I probably would do it again.
Yeah, actually, we cannot possibly get to know why you fell down. Because the cause of our fall down is in the spiritual nature. But we are in the material nature. So when we are in the material nature, how can you possibly know the spiritual cause of our fall down? So only when we go back to the spiritual nature, then only we'll be able to understand, not before that. And Prabhupada pointed out, now you realize that you are bound by the material nature and try to get out of here. Why you fell down is irrelevant. How you fell down is irrelevant. You are fallen, so now you try to go back, get out of this fallen condition. The basic cause we know. As we say that envy towards Krishna or forgetfulness of Krishna. So these are the basic cause of our fall down. But what is the specific cause, that we do not know. That we'll know only when we are when we return to our spiritual identity. You want to answer the question?
Well, I just wanted to make the point. Yes. Always, always
Yes, that's one possibility. Yeah. Right. That's a possibility, actually. The Vaishnava aparadha is the cause of a living entity's fall down too. That's actually a major cause. There are reference like that, actually. You see, in Skanda Puran, there's a reference like Shubal had a tiff with Radharani, and he was cursed, and he fell down, and he became Jalandharasu. Right? Pretty mind-boggling. Well, Prabhupada actually addressed that point in a little different way. Prabhupada said that we fell down from the spiritual sky, but when you go back, then there is no question of falling down. Prabhupada, referring to that shloka, Jadga Tvano Nivartante. And Prabhupada is saying it's because once bitten, twice shy. Like, first we didn't have... Yeah, Dhanam Jacob. Well, I mean... Obviously, we are not hovering in the sky. We were sheltered in some planet. Like, if we are in the spiritual nature. Or we may have been in Brahma Jyoti, where the existence was more like an unconscious state of existence. There is no question of, you know, utilizing your faculty of will. So, if we consider that we had our will, we had our specific identity and we were acting on that identity, then we have to say that we had a specific relationship with Krishna in some place where Krishna is present and his pastimes are going on in his dham with his associates. So the general concept is, when you say spiritual sky, we generally mean the spiritual planet. Anyway, like, this is that, you know, never-ending question, you know, that can never be answered. My point is, let us go back to Godhead and then we'll find out. Right. If you're not there, right. If you haven't been there, then how can you go back? Yeah.
The example is there of the two doorkeepers of Ivan, the first one.
Right. The Supreme Personality of Godhead
has given up his natural tendency of equality towards demons and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees, the demigods, just as a restless child leans towards someone. I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too be peaceful. Purport: the defect of the demoniac mentality is expressed in this very verse clearly. Hiranyakashipu thought that Vishnu also becomes partial like a child whose mind is not steady or resolute. The Lord can change his mind at any time, Hiranyakashipu thought, and therefore his words and activities are like those of children. Actually, because the demons are ordinary human beings, their minds change, and being materially conditioned, they think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is conditioned also. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:11, Avajananti mang mudha manushin tanumashritam. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Demons always think that Vishnu can be killed. Therefore, being absorbed in thoughts of Vishnu's form to kill him, at least they have the opportunity to think of Vishnu unfavorably. Although they are not devotees, their thinking of Vishnu is effective, and thus they generally attain Shajujya Mukti. Because the demons consider the Supreme Lord an ordinary living being, they think that they can kill Lord Vishnu as one might kill an ordinary person. Another fact disclosed herein is that demons are very much fond of sucking blood. Indeed, all of them are meat-eaters and blood-suckers. Hiranyakashipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child who can be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes or laddus. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Patram pushpam phalam toyam jome bhakta prajachati tadaham bhakti uparhitam ashnami prajatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. The Lord accepts the offerings of the devotees because of their transcendental love. Because they are in love with the Supreme Lord, they do not eat anything without offering it first to the Lord. The Lord does not hanker for a small leaf or flower. He has enough to eat. Indeed, he is feeding all living entities. Nonetheless, because he is very merciful and is bhakta vatsal, very favorable to the devotees, he certainly eats whatever they offer him with love and devotion. The quality should not be misjudged. This quality should not be misjudged to be childish. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that he is bhakta vatsal. In other words, he is always extremely pleased with his devotees. As for the word Maya, when used in reference to the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, this word means affection. The actions of the Lord to favor his devotees are not disqualification, but signs of his natural affection. As for Rudhira, or the blood of Lord Vishnu, since there is no possibility of severing Lord Vishnu's head from his body, there is no question of blood. But the garland that decorates Vishnu's body is as red as blood. When the demons achieve Shajujya Mukti and leave behind their sinful activities, they are blessed by Vishnu's garland, which is red like blood. After attaining Shajujya Mukti, the demons are sometimes promoted to the Vaikuntha world, where they receive the reward of the Lord's garland, Prasad. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality towards the demons and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees, the demigods, just as a restless child leans towards someone. I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I be peaceful. So, there are some people, those who are naturally averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they are known as demons. And the people, those who are naturally inclined towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are known as devotees. Actually, there are only three kinds of people: devotees, demons, and innocent. There are some people, those who do not know about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's why they are not attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That category, or that kind of people, is known as the innocent or balish. Ishvare tadodhineshu balisheshu vitsatsucha premo maitri kripa upekha ja karoti samadham. So it has been described that there are three kinds of people: innocent, devotees, and demons. So it is not that some people are demons because they look in certain way or so and so forth, but actually it is not according to their appearance, external appearance, that one becomes a demon, but according to one's internal tendency towards the Supreme Personality of God. If somebody is naturally averse, naturally hateful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are the demons. We have seen in the Vedas there are descriptions of people, those who are born in a Brahmin family, those who are performing all kinds of Vedic rituals, but they were actually considered to be demons. They were actually demons. Like Ravan, he was born as a son of a Brahmin. And Ravan was an expert, he was an exponent of the Vedic rituals. He was the most expert performer of yajna or sacrifices. At that time, Ravan was the most expert performer of Vedic sacrifices. But still, we find Ravan to be a demon. Here also we are seeing Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. They are also born of a great Brahmin sage. But in spite of being born in a Brahmin family, and in spite of being educated with the Vedic scriptures, still they have been considered to be a demon. Why? Because their mentality was very offensive towards the Lord. And through this verse we can see, like Hiranyakashipu became so angry because Vishnu killed his brother Hiranyaksha. He decided to kill Vishnu. He thought that Vishnu was an ordinary person or is an ordinary person, and like any other ordinary living beings, Vishnu also can be killed. Vishnu's head also can be severed from his trunk. So that is the unfortunate condition of the demons. They cannot understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Spiritual Personality. He is the cause of all causes, and He is the shelter of everything and the source of everything. Not knowing that, they think that Vishnu is an ordinary person. And not only that Vishnu is an ordinary person, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead is an ordinary person, but they think that they can take up the supreme position themselves. They perform all kinds of austerities and penances in order to become powerful and become the supreme controller. So that is the unfortunate position of the demons. And in present world also there are many demons, but they are minute demons. In Kali Yuga, people lose their potency. People become very weak. In Satya Yuga, everybody was very powerful. So when somebody became demoniac, then he also became a very powerful demon, like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravan, Kumbhakarna, Shishupal, Dantavakra. So they were demons. And they were very powerful demons. It's not that at the present time there is no demon. At the present moment also there are many, many demons. Actually the number of the demons have increased, but their potency has decreased. The number has increased, but their potency has decreased. And we can see how when people become very offensive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in spite of becoming aware of His position, when they become offensive to the Lord, then we have to understand that this is a demoniac person. But fortunately, he is not a very powerful person, that's why his demoniac tendencies are not very much manifest. If they had, then they would have done everything. And we can see that so many people are trying to stop this Krishna consciousness movement. And anybody who tries to stop this movement is actually a demon. But unfortunately, for the demons, they can never stop this movement. Actually, this movement is the representative of Krishna. This movement is non-different from Krishna. And the way one acts towards the movement is the indication whether he is a demon or innocent or a devotee. In this age, Krishna has appeared in the form of his holy name. Kolikale Naam Rupe Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, Krishna appears in the form of his holy name. And this holy name of Krishna is being spread through this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. At least this is the major flow of the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the main branch of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement in this age. So if someone becomes averse to this movement, if someone becomes offensive to this movement, he is actually displaying his demoniac tendency. On the other hand, if someone is favorably disposed to this movement, he is actually a devotee. So whoever is favorably disposed to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is a devotee. And the ones, those who do not really know what this movement is and what is the goal of this movement, they are innocent, and our business is to go to them, preach to them, and make them favorable towards this movement. Like yesterday somebody was telling me, I think it was Shrutidhar Prabhu, that there was this wedding here in the temple, and many Western people came as a guest to this wedding, and they all became very favorable to our society immediately after they came in contact with our society. The moment they were favorably disposed to our society, they immediately became favorable. Although initially they had all kinds of wrong notions about ISKCON. They had all kinds of misconception about ISKCON previously. But yesterday when they came here, saw our temple, spoke to our devotees, they immediately became favorable. So this is an indication, this is a sign of innocent people. Like they do not know Krishna, they do not know Krishna's movement, Sankirtan movement. That's why they are either nonchalant about the movement or offensive to the movement. But the moment they are favorably disposed to the movement, the moment they get to know about the movement by coming in contact with the devotees or coming to the temple, then immediately they become favorable. And I have seen many, many people, those who fall in this category. So actually most of the people are innocent. And that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on preaching. Because we have to educate these innocent people, because otherwise they will not be able to come to Krishna consciousness. So it is our duty to go out to them and preach to them by giving books or even personally cultivating them, and then immediately they become favorable. But at the same time, there are some people, those who do not become favorable, but instead they become even more offensive. And it has been instructed that a preacher should avoid those people. When somebody becomes offensive to Krishna consciousness or Krishna or Krishna's devotees, then immediately we should avoid them. Upekha. Now we must avoid them. But to the innocent, balishesu kripa, we have to show our mercy to the innocent people. In the beginning they may not be very receptive, but if their attitude is positive or at least neutral, then we must go to them and preach to them and try to bring them to Krishna consciousness. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam time and time again has pointed out these three classes of people: the demons, the devotees, and the innocent people. Not so much about the innocent, but mostly about the devotees and the demons, as if it has been painted in black and white. We are seeing the character very vividly. We are seeing the nature or the characteristics of the demons, and then side by side we are seeing the nature of the devotees. And immediately we see the contrast, and or rather through the contrast the greatness or the glories of the devotees become very, very obvious. And who is a devotee? Devotee is a person who has spontaneous love for Krishna. A devotee is a person who is situated on the spiritual platform. Being situated on the spiritual platform means situated on his spiritual identity. We cannot remain in our bodily platform and become situated on the spiritual platform. We cannot remain attached to our body, but spiritually situated. That never works. If we are attached to our bodies, then we automatically be situated on the material platform. So, a devotee, in order to become a devotee, we have to become situated in our spiritual identity. That means we have to go penetrate through our gross body, we have to penetrate through our subtle body, and we have to be situated in our spiritual identity or spiritual body. So a devotee is a person who is situated in his spiritual identity, and when one becomes situated in his spiritual identity, then he spontaneously falls in love with Krishna. Devotion is not an artificial process. It's a very natural process. It's a very spontaneous urge of our hearts. Like everybody wants to love somebody. Everybody wants to love something. But actually we want to love Krishna. And that love becomes manifest only when we are situated in our spiritual identity. Sometimes we notice that when somebody is in his bodily platform, in his gross material identity, then he falls very intensely in love with some material object. A young man falls in love with a young girl, and so on and so forth. It's a spontaneous, it's a natural thing. But actually the love is a phenomena of the spirit. But since they are oblivious of their spiritual identity, since they are identifying themselves with the body, then they want to love through the body, through the gross material body, another gross material object. So that's why it has been pointed out time and time again that this is a perverted reflection. The love in the mundane platform is a perverted reflection of Krishna consciousness. Actual love is Krishna consciousness. Actual love is our love for Krishna. And that becomes manifest the way where a young man automatically, spontaneously becomes attracted to a beautiful young girl. The same way, when we become situated in our spiritual identity, then spontaneously we'll feel that love for Krishna. But that will happen only when we are situated in our spiritual identity. Often people ask, I have been in a movement, I have been practicing devotional service for so many years, why didn't I develop this love for Krishna as yet, in spite of so many years of devotional service? The answer is very simple. The answer is that we are still in our bodily platform. We are still identifying ourselves with our gross material body, or at the most our subtle material body. We have not become situated in our spiritual identity, and that's why we could not develop our love for Krishna as yet. But the moment we become situated in our spiritual identity, immediately we will develop our love for Krishna. And in order to become situated in our spiritual identity, we practice devotional service. One does not become perfect as soon as he steps into Krishna consciousness. At first, he'll have to practice the process of devotional service. And by practicing this process of sadhana bhakti, one becomes gradually elevated to the spiritual platform. And when one becomes situated in his spiritual identity, then he immediately develops the love for Krishna or Krishna prema. And the process for this age is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and not only chanting, but associating with the devotees, and in the association of devotees, we hear and chant and positively exchange with each other. Hare Krishna. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is here. He is going to give a He's going to read from the Natakam, Prabhupada Bhakti Rasa, Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada.